Yeah.
To the podcast. This is Chris, and I'm hosting today. And we are talking Dishonored 2, and the Jokers are making lots and lots of noise because I've scolded them because last time we recorded, they were all spiking. They were overcompensating by having these huge, huge waveforms, and it was a mess. And Chris was typing all the time, and oh man, the editor was crying for hours.
You know when you don't edit playthrough often.
No.
when Jim and I edit, in particular, you don't hear a peep from us.
That's true.
We finish the episode, then the next thing you know, oh, episode's been published. With Mads, you get at least half a day of messages on the group moaning about various things.
Moaning and whining and oh man.
I just mute the conversation in the end.
Comes back in like a couple of days later.
Is he still going?
Yeah. He's still going. Oh, back on mute.
Just get on with it, will you?
This is stick a great it, look behind it, the scenes, isn't it?
That's it. Stick it through Levelator and job done.
Mm. Yeah.
So this is all going in the episode, of course, but I'm going to restart the introduction. Welcome along to Playthrough. This is episode 2511, and we're talking Dishonored. It's part two, so we are at mission five onwards. And I'm here with sweet old Chris that you've heard talk a lot. Say hello, Chris.
Hello.
And Jimbo?
Can it be a young Emily Caldwin?
Emily Caldwin, wasn't she kind of Coronation Street?
Hello.
Bishop, wasn't it? Emily Bishop.
Emily Baldwin. Caldwin.
Oh, Baldwin. Yeah, there was it.
Baldwin. Mike Baldwin.
Mike Baldwin.
Mike Baldwin, he's dead.
And he had his Jaguar, didn't he?
Yeah.
On the cobbled streets.
Is he dead?
He must be by now.
So what are the old guys talking about?
Coronation Street, mate. Do you get Coronation Street?
Yeah, British soaps.
No. He was always fighting with Ken Barlow, wasn't he? Oh, him and Ken always had a bit of a to-do.
Him and Ken. They were like that. It was like Sephiroth and Cloud, wasn't it? Like
pretty much, yeah. Maybe that's where they got their inspiration from.
Who was the other guy? Who was the guy with the tash? Jim? Jim?
Oh, Jim, Irish Jim McDonald.
Jimmy Donald. He's doing a tour. A theatre tour of like Q&A sessions talking about
no
his
way. I'd be up for that.
I was going to buy my wife tickets just for a laugh to go and see, make her go and sit. She probably wouldn't even know who he is. But
he's
got to
be getting on now.
But apparently all of these guys, there's a market out there. These guys, there was a podcast I was listening to the other day and now who was it? Somebody from, Carl.
Carl.
It was Steve, was it not? On the
Steve McDonald.
Retro Asylum.
Did he not go along with
Ericsson?
Somebody bought him. He mentioned that he liked Neighbours.
Oh, yes.
So somebody bought him tickets to go. And like Carl, as in Carl and Susan, were doing
Yeah,
he was doing a tour. So it was like he went along and heard all about behind the scenes on Neighbours. And
well,
like,
you wouldn't have seen it, but Steve posted in our Retro Asylum chat a picture of him and Alan Fletcher, Carl Kennedy together.
Well, there you go. Yep.
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, he's probably a good little earner for these guys.
I know. Well, he's not an actual doctor, is he? So he's got...
That's it. Yeah. Stolen valour. He's been, like, practising under false pretences.
It's been cancelled now as well again, hasn't it? So he's got got to have a side hustle.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Mads. That was just some important information we had to share.
Sidetracked you a little bit.
I'm very glad that we got all this covered because that's very important content on the show, I think. Got no idea what you were talking about, but let's move on to the game. Because we are in a bit of a hurry today, so let's keep it short and sweet. we'll go straight into mission five, which is the conservatory, the Royal Conservatory, is that what it's called, where we are looking for Brianna Ashworth, who's working together with Delilah. We know that she, from some of the pre-mission chatter, that she's working on the Oraculum, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
This kind of device that connects our world to the void and kind of draws magical powers from the void into our world so that the witches can actually have magic, because otherwise they wouldn't be that magic. That's how I understood it, at least. You can tell me if I'm wrong, because some of the story is a bit hard to understand.
Yeah, I think that's my understanding as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. There's a lot of story. There's a lot of background lore.
There is. And I mean, even though I love walking around in the world and picking up all those books and letters and reading all of that, at some point there was simply too much in this game for me.
Yeah.
So I stopped reading it that thoroughly. I just skimmed through it and read what I thought.
Yeah, there were some things that looked like they might be a bit more pertinent than others. You'd have a quick look at the title or whatever and you think, all right, that's just definitely some background fluff. And then there'd be other things that think, oh, actually, this is a bit more relevant to the main plot beats, but I like the fact that it exists.
So I didn't study the Sakonan songs that early, for example.
You're not going to recite us one?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? Like we've said before, when we all played these Dark Souls games, we're always like, oh, I'd love a bit more in your face with the lore, like maybe some books you can read in the game and pick up as you go. And I tell you what, by towards the end of this, I just wasn't reading anything. It was just sort of throwaway.
Yeah, I like it either in character interactions or cutscenes, and I don't really feel like I need to be. If it's that important, then don't make it missable.
So I think a good rule of thumb in this game is read all of the letters and notes, because they're actually important. They'll give you clues to what you actually can do in the level. Whereas the books are more background information that. Mm. 9 out of 10 times, it's just there to give you a bit of flavor. It doesn't do anything else.
It is good at telling you as well if something you've picked something up that has added to your mission, like
you
a clue
a
or something.
Clue, don't you?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I mean, that's excellent. If you pick something up with a code, it'll actually, and you just skim through it and didn't even see the code, it'll be there in your little objectives.
I mean, we're old school gamers, though, right? I mean, we covered this a little bit last time, but do you wish the game didn't hold your hand maybe as much as it does? I know what Andy's going to say to this, but man,
how do you know what I'm going to say?
you and I grew up on text adventures and old school graphic adventures,
weird games,
weird games. We are weird gamers. I wish there was less of that. You know, I in some ways I agree with you. I agree with you all in that. I think some of the flavor text definitely lost its luster for me as the game went on. I actually really enjoyed the main story and the main plot beat. It's ridiculous, but it's fun, and it actually kept me trucking along. Whereas, you know, some of the more background lore, I kind of started off quite earnestly, but by the end of it was pretty much not reading anything, knowing that the game would be there for me if there was something I needed to know. But on the other hand, I kind of wish that it did kind of let me loose a little bit and try to figure out some of these things myself rather than, and I know you can turn off the HUD markers and all stuff like that, but I feel like the game would be better for giving you a little bit more freedom in some of these levels.
So you've had just the same experience as me. I was reading everything to begin with, and in the end I was skimming through it, especially the books, because they were just flavor. And I do wish if they'd taken the approach of having just a third of what you can read there instead, and let that guide me through the level instead of like HUD markers, for example. I never turned off the HUD, and that's because I kind of thought that I have this stupid thing with that I always play all games on default settings on normal, because I want to see what the designers actually wanted to show me. But apart from that, I also felt that all of these letters, these notes, all of these things wouldn't actually tell me exactly where to go and what I needed to do, because you were supposed to lean on those HUD markers. Yeah. But I do wish that I mean, finding out where the different people are and so on would be found on those little notes or gleamed in the environment instead of that you always have like three hot markers. Oh, you can go there to do that side quest, there to do that side quest, and the main quest is over there. So it's holding your hand too much, I actually think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think turning off the hot markers. We'd have to ask Aaron. He'll probably say that it's a good idea.
But did you see, I mean, I had a look at his screenshot he posted last night of, I think he just finished Mission 8. 7 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
On Mission 8.
Takes a while then.
I mean, that's 7 hours of just wandering around trying to figure out what to do, man. That it's just not, I would not enjoy that.
No, no. Me neither.
Well, that sounds like my Outer Wilds playthrough.
You just now. Be careful because we're going to be playing that DLC at some point. So.
Washing my hair that night.
What but again, I guess testament to the game design that you can do it that way. You know, yes, it takes you 7 hours, but you absolutely can. You're on the highest difficulty. It is possible, which I think is quite an impressive achievement. And in both from his point of view, but also from the design point of view.
Mm. Yeah. What do you guys make of the world? Like generally, I mean, not the story necessarily, but the kind of the setting, the world, the wider stuff.
I love the world that they've built here.
Yes.
I love the look of it. I love exploring it, and I love reading all of those notes that tells me something about how the people there live. It doesn't sound like a pleasant place to live, but but I really do love it, and I think the story is quite kind of good as well. We know from Dishonored 1 that there was a lot of unrest about 15 years ago, and then there was a short period of peace, I guess, and then all this with the Crown Killer and all this unrest with Duke Abel starts, and then all of a sudden we have the gangs coming in again and so on. But I love it. I think it's a great world that they've built there. I'd love them to make some more Dishonored games.
Yeah. I feel like they've really made an effort to create a world here, and this story is just one thing that is happening in, and they, you know, I love that, and they deserve a lot of credit for. I just wish they populated the world with more interesting characters. Because I think other than, I don't even the likes of Sokolov, I kind of didn't really find it all very interesting. I mean, the story was fun, but the Duke, for instance, like Duke Abel, who, you know, we end up ultimately deposing one way or the other, didn't really feel much towards him. You know, Jindosh is another one, and
you're actually right. The characters were built up better in Dishonored 1.
Yeah,
Dishonored
maybe.
2 feels a bit sparse. Maybe it's because of the whole mission structure where it's level, this level here, this level there.
Yeah,
because it feels like the people you're encountering, they're either the civilians or they're hostiles. I mean, we've got overseers and the Grand Guard, and or maybe the Duke's men. But that's it. And then there's one or two NPCs that are actually interesting, like Mindy or Paolo or some of those, but there's very few of those, whereas in the first game there were all these different groups and gangs and their leaders and Nanny, Granny, what's she called? Granny Rex?
Granny Weatherwax, mate.
Not Granny Weatherwax, no. Granny Rex, I think she was Granny called.
How does it work in the first game? Are these people that you meet, are they constantly talking to you through the mission? Because you do kind of feel like once you leave the boat in this, that's it. You don't see him again until the end of the mission. And so maybe that's one way that if you was to ever get another Dishonored game, you'd have constant sort of comms, chatting.
Yeah, they'd have to change the structure of the game though, wouldn't they, I think? I mean, I don't know what Mads thinks, but I think I've listened back to a couple of podcasts about Dishonored 1, and actually it reminded me that the games are strikingly similar in terms of their structure. You know, very mission based. In Dishonored 1, your hub wasn't a ship; it was a pub. Very extremely similar, very similar powers. You know, Dishonored 2 is very much an evolution on the formula.
So, in Dishonored 1, instead of going to a separate mission, you was in like a big world, but like partly gated off, or
no, it's exactly the same.
Okay.
Was it? I forget.
Yeah, you used to go on the boat. It used to get taken on the little rowboat to the whatever.
True, yeah. You there was a little dock next to the pub, and you'd walk out there, and Sam would row.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Did the Hub Hopper have a shop in it, or did you have to find those in the world as well?
Well, I seem to remember it did have something, Mads, didn't it? Didn't you go to Sokolov to get your upgrade?
Yeah,
to
I think business? So too, yeah.
Yeah, it's one thing I think that I would do differently is I would have the, on the Dreadful Whale, is to have a shop or some sort of way to restock, because it was quite annoying. I quite liked once you're in the levels that you just wanted to then go off and get into them rather than having to sometimes find out these places to kit yourself out, then go and do the rest of the mission. It was quite nice doing that in between. Or I'd rather do it in between. Mm.
I quite like the fact that I kind of gave you, because it was the black market, wasn't it? And you almost had to hunt out the black market shop in a particular level.
Yeah, I don't know, it'd be better, or even have both. You know, if you need to sort of resupply mid-level, then you can go to the black market. But it's quite nice to start the game tooled up, or start the level tooled up.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. I had the same thought, but I always seek out the black market first.
Then same,
I buy the upgrades. and then I buy a bit of equipment, and then I rob the black market so I can steal.
I didn't rob one black market shop. I was a very good boy.
Yeah, I was too on my. I'm actually working on my third playthrough by now. So my first playthrough was, and I got the good ending. I was non-violent and so on with Emily, and it was great. And she didn't rob any of those markets. But Corvo, who is going through the missions right now, he's a bit of a bastard.
He's got problems.
He's got problems for sure.
Yeah, I ended up a little bit underwhelmed, though, on the, not necessarily the main story, but just the wider stuff. You know, I came away from it a little bit like it was a missed opportunity. They created this brilliant framework. It looks great. It's full of interesting things. It's just not really full of interesting characters or stories, and that feel like it's maybe a bit of a missed opportunity. And let's face it, we're not going to get a Dishonored 3, so that's it.
Mm. Yeah. I wonder if some of that is a conscious decision to keep you on the main path.
I feel like they tried, though, Jim. I feel like a lot of work went into creating the world, and I feel like a lot of it has gone to waste.
Yeah. No, it, definitely.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think it does feel a bit sparse. More could be going on in these cities. And there could be more. There is stuff. I mean, if you go down the side alleys, you'll hear people talking about planning, robbing some apartments. Yeah. And you can use that as hints for, oh, that apartment has something that's worth robbing. I'll go there myself. And so if you do spend the time, there is lots going on, but they're not really named NPCs. It's just chatter that you pick up here and there, really. They could have built a bit more with some more known NPCs that you'd meet multiple times, for example.
Because you did seem to spend your time just walking the streets purely looking for enemy characters without any concern as to other stuff that you might happen across. You know, there's not really kind of any other kind of, or it's not like you find, I don't think there was any kind of, maybe one or two with pile and stuff. It's like you don't come across any kind of ambient side quests or anything, do you?
No,
it's like, all
there is a few. I mean, you get the like observatory, for example, the mission
kind of optional, but not kind of, I don't know, or no kind of, I don't think there was any sort of repeating side quests, was there? Like in Horizon, which I like that, where you'd meet people at various points, across the world map, and you wouldn't be able to complete it sometimes until hours and hours later. I liked that, being able to revisit stuff like that. And it just added to that sense of world building.
It's like there's nothing like that. It's very mission-based here, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like the Mindy Blanchard thing, isn't it? Where early in the game, where you get that optional objective to go and retrieve the body.
That's right.
We talked about that last time. But like that, she comes back in the in the mission with Paolo, when you get to choose between the Howlers and the Overseer, and she's there in kind of Paolo's gang. But again, there's no real payoff there. Like there's no, doesn't follow it through. We completed that mission for Mindy. We were saying last time, wow, there'll be something that will have consequences later, but it just never does.
Well, I was going to ask actually, so it's probably a good, you couple of you guys killed Paolo, didn't you, in the shop?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but he doesn't die. He just turns into white rats and they run away.
Okay.
Yeah. You have to kill him twice, don't you, before the...
That's exactly... Okay. That was their get-out-of-jail card, because I was like, how does this work? And then, obviously, it got explained, so I'm glad he did.
So my corvo just killed him, and then he ran, chased all of the rats and killed all of those just because I wanted to see if I can kill him that way. So I'm looking forward to seeing whether he's dead now, but he probably isn't.
Yeah, Paolo's running the city in my game now.
Same, he's running the gaff.
Yeah, interesting that. Yeah, we'll get into that. But
yeah, I guess, Chris, you probably got the good ending as well.
Well, I've already done it once. I had the non-lethal...
Yeah, me too.
Low chaos ending. So if
it's very much
ending,
a everybody lived happily ever after kind of ending, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Except for, you know, the poor people that you that you don't kill, but you give them a fate a lot worse than death.
Yeah, although my corvo did take a bit of a dark turn towards the end, which I'll talk about in.
Okay. More on that later then.
Yeah. Well, that makes me think about the civilians, actually, just before we move on. You was on about, like, if you could have more to do with the civilians and side quests and stuff like that. By the end of it, civilians weren't coming anywhere near me. They were running as soon as they saw me. So I was having to kill them because they were giving me away to the guards.
Yeah. Mm. Did you chase them?
Oh, yeah, I shot them down, yeah.
Yeah.
I got a fully ramped up arrow, quiver and everything. Yeah. They were all getting...
And then you could chase them sometimes for like up to a minute or whatever, and they were so terrified they would keep stumbling and try and get back up again. Chase them further down the street. It's endless amusement. Yeah.
No, I played it through non-lethal for the first time, and everybody was very friendly towards me. But the Corvo that I'm playing through with right now, it's a New Game Plus playthrough, actually. So I got to keep the runes. That's the only difference. You get to keep the runes that you got.
Oh, so you go back in with all your power? Or
not with the powers, you get the runes instead, because I changed character, for example, from Emily to Corvo, so you can't keep the same powers, but you can keep the runes and you can reapply those. I'm a kind of souped up Corvo, but in the beginning of this mission, when you jump off the ship and there's some dock workers there standing there discussing stuff, they started attacking Corvo.
Yeah.
And that's because I'm a high chaos playthrough right now, and people are acting completely different to me than they were when I was Emily, when nobody would be running off or be scared unless I killed somebody right in front of them.
Although I would argue that if you were a worker in a mansion and you saw some masked bloke with a heart in one hand and a knife in another, you might want to run and not comment about how the stew is cooking.
Yeah, I think it's maybe time for a fish cake.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, getting back on track and talking about Mission 5 then, there are lots of ways through this, but as usual, the big bad, who is Brianna Ashwood here, has to be either killed or in some other way incapacitated. And I guess Jim and Andy, you killed the poor witch, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She's not poor either. She's just a witch, so she's dead. But yes, dead.
So the more fun way to do it, I feel that this game, especially after having played it in low chaos as Emily, that's what they intended people to see, low chaos Emily playthrough. But because that is definitely, it makes most sense, and the most... the lore that you find around the world kind of ties into that, I think. But the more convoluted way of doing this is finding some... They've created some lenses that, instead of pulling magic out of the void, actually pushes it back in to the void. That's how I understood it. So there was some faulty lenses for the Oraculum. So you need to find those, and you need to sneak your way past Brianna Ashworth, because it's on the floor above her. And you need to go and find those lenses, go back to the Oraculum, and fit the lenses, and then you need to knock her out and bring her down there, as far as I remember, and then flip the switch, and then you pull all the magic out of her and off all of the other witches in the building, I guess. But they were all sleeping in my playthrough at this point. I made this huge pile of sleeping witches at some behind some bookshelves. So I think I sent you guys a picture, didn't I? at some point of sleeping witches with Brianna Ashworth on top of them. But so they were all sleeping there, and you remove all the magic that they gathered from the void, and then you go up into I don't think you have to, but then you can go up into her office and talk to Delilah, because there is a statue there that is a representation of Delilah, which you
that's right. Yeah, through. There's a few of these in this second half of the game, isn't there? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So you can speak to that statue, and Delilah, now she's very, very upset that you pulled her magic away. It would be for Delilah, it would have been better if you just killed her, because that was a fate worse than death. So,
yeah, there's some good stuff here, isn't it? Like, I like the whole stuff, because one of the optional objectives is that you have to go and see that vice overseer guy, don't you? And you have to find out what he knows.
Yeah,
and there's some good stuff about. The relationship between the overseers and Brianna Ashworth, and what they were up to, and whether they support the coup, and all stuff like that.
So the overseers and their little religion thingy, they are the male overseers are those like enforcers that go around and kill people that mess with the void or something like that. Yeah. And then they have these sisters that are kind of like their oracles, they can see the future and so on. That's the idea, though. But they're of course not supposed to use the void. So Brianna Ashworth, and that's what Byrne has found out or is speculating, is that she's doing something wrong and misusing the order. And that is what she's doing. She's made witches instead of these overseer sisters out of her following, right? And is using magic, which is very much not something that the overseers want you to do.
And there's some good optional objectives, isn't there? Like, you got to get that prototype, the Roseboro prototype, which is in that room where you've got to figure out how to get in there before the alarm goes off and all the shutters go up and stuff like that. And
so I broke the window, jumped in, and everything just closed around me.
Yeah. But we also, is this the first time when we come across the wolfhounds in Dishonored 2 as well?
Yeah, yeah.
You can get a bone charm here, which means that they fight for you.
Yes, that's a good one.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Because
I
was going for non-lethal, so
which is I mean, obviously if you go for non-lethal it's no good, but I was aiming for non-lethal, but if there were friendly fire, then say the big
I couldn't work out for the longest time that you had to throw their skulls away as well.
Me neither.
I couldn't work out why they kept reappearing from places, and I thought I'd killed them and I'd moved on to something else and another one would appear, and I thought, do these just keep respawning? And then I realized that obviously that was the reason why.
Yeah,
which strikes me that there's gameplay possibilities there where involve him carrying the skull to a location, dropping it, not throwing it, but dropping it so it doesn't shatter, and allowing the wolfhounds to attack guards and stuff like that. I didn't try any of it myself, but
so on your on my bone charm it was only white
white wolfhounds.
Those are the ghost ones, those that respawn. Because the regular wolfhounds we've seen before, they were in the, what was it, mission 3 or 4 as well, right?
Yeah, where they were in the room, weren't
that's
they?
That's it.
But those can just be killed.
So the white wolfhounds tend to be where the witches are, right?
Hmm. Yeah.
So they come back in the mission 9 as well.
Yeah.
But it's nice, it was nice to fight some different kind of enemies, you know, that different attack patterns, and they blink in and out, wouldn't they? And
yeah, I was just about to say they're upping the difficulty in the if you want to do hand-to-hand combat, because they are really, really fast and blink away and then they're behind you. So
And also, like, I loved how you would find them in completely random places as well. Like, they'd just be sitting up on a chandelier and things like that. It's the sort of thing that if you had these powers, and of course that's what you'd be doing. If you could just travel, if you could be anywhere in a room, then you're not just going to be sat in a sofa next to the fireplace. You're going to be all over it. So I thought that was quite cool.
Yeah, it's a good mission. Like, it doesn't have the Jindosh levels of complexity in terms of figuring out, you know, how to achieve the non-lethal completion. But it's fun nonetheless, and we're starting to get some of the wider plot stuff with Delilah as well, which is cool.
Mm. It was a good level to try to be to be sneaky, because it was actually quite hard to be sneaky around both the wolfhounds and the witches. So it took me a good few goes before I finished this level.
Mm.
But I've just played through it as Corvo, who isn't, well, he's trying to be sneaky, but if something goes south, he just kills everything he sees. Yeah. And that was a lot easier.
Yeah.
Should we move on to the next mission, or do you have anything you'd like to say about this?
No, just like the level design, like the aesthetic of this level. Yeah. I thought it was good.
Yeah,
it was
very, conservatory very itself, yeah.
It was very, very dense level, right? I mean, some of the others have been sparse and not that many people around, and it took a long time to like navigate the entire environment and seek out the secrets. But this was very condensed, quite well designed, I find.
Yeah. I think with the exception of the Clockwork Mansion, I think the second half of the game is definitely a lot stronger in terms of the levels.
I think from this mission, well, the next one and onward, it just gets better and better and better, if you ask me. I mean, mission 6 and 7 are exquisite. So, So, ready to move on to the next mission then?
Yes.
So the next mission, initially I didn't see a lot of this because this is the Dust District. And here you have three, at least, different ways to finish the mission. So the objective is really just opening a door and getting to the mansion, isn't it? And either you can go, you can cite, there are the Overseers or there are Paolo and his gang.
Yeah.
One of those two can, you can incapacitate one of them and give him to the other. That's how I understand it. And then the other will help you into the mansion. Or you can walk straight up into to the gate and just solve the puzzle that's right to the right of it. There's just a one-page puzzle.
It's the Jindosh lock, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And there's this puzzle. I loved that puzzle. It took me about half an hour. When I encountered it, I immediately just took a picture with my phone and went for a cup of coffee and sat there with a piece of paper writing down and figuring out what was going on.
So you
was
trying
and
to solve it.
Went straight back to the door and opened it on the first attempt.
Without siding with either faction?
No, nothing. So I didn't know that that this was going to end the mission.
Same, yes. Nice. I didn't solve the puzzle, but I didn't appreciate that opening the door was going to... I had some unfinished business and I didn't realise that was going to be the case as soon as you opened the door. But how cool is it that the game allows you to do that, though?
Yeah, it was pretty neat. Yeah. It was a good puzzle. It was logical all the way through. You had to make one jump. There's one point where one of the things, I think it's either the color or the drink that they're having, can fit on two people. So you have to try it. You have to say, okay, say that this guy is the white one and then see if everything else fits. But that's it. Apart from that, everything else was... only had one place. So there were, five or six dinner guests, and they all are wearing clothes of some color. They're drinking a specific drink. They are from a specific place in the world, and they have an heirloom with them.
Yeah.
Was there something else as well? No, that's probably it, I guess. So and then from reading this little description of the evening, you have to figure out who is who and who has which heirloom with them, because that's the lock combination.
So how did you find the door?
It's there straight away when you
just
open the level.
Straight ahead. You go in through these buildings where you meet Megan, who's waiting for you.
Yeah.
And she kind of points out the window and say that's the way, the door is there, and if you just go straight, it's straight out there.
Was there a mission marker on the door?
No, there wasn't actually.
There was.
Was there? Okay.
Yeah.
But there wasn't in my game.
I'm not sure there was. There was a mission marker towards Paolo or Baron, right?
Yeah. So I never saw the door because I got the here after you, Mads, and I was looking forward to having a crack at this puzzle. But I was not, you know, maybe blindly, slavishly following the mission markers, never. I didn't ever see the door until I'd done the thing, which meant that I was given the solution to the puzzle.
So if you do the things, do you just get the solution to the puzzle and still have to go the same way? Okay.
And then you get a marker on the door then.
Okay.
I probably did it the opposite way around, but I found the door right away and thought, I'm not working that puzzle out, I'm going to have to find another way.
That's how I did it, yeah.
I'm clearly going to have to go and kill some people instead.
Yeah,
so.
That's it. And then I didn't make a conscious decision as to whether it was the Overseers or Paolo. It was just
whoever you come to first.
Yeah.
Well, actually, there's some truth in that. Although I thought I actually made the decision because... Initially, I was interested. I thought, well, how can Paolo be? How is it even an option? I thought, is this going to cause me problems?
Yeah.
And I thought, I will go after the Overseer initially and see what happens. Yeah, the plan was to go after. Yes, I went into Paolo's bit to see what sort of reception I got. And there was no, I guess maybe a slight shortcoming, or maybe there was deliberate, but there's no recognition of the fact that I attempted to kill him. He didn't even mention that, and then I went off and got the overseer and brought him back. But that seemed to be a slight gap in terms of my personal playthrough.
Yeah.
I fully expected they would attack me. They'd be like, well, you're the guy.
It would make sense.
Yeah.
I had a weird bug that I struggled with this level a little bit. I didn't massively enjoy it. Like, I didn't really fully understand what I was doing, most of it. You know, because I didn't find the Jindosh lock, I was just kind of bumbling my way through. Ended up going to Paolo's place first and picking up that thread, going back to the overseer, doing the overseer bit, but didn't ever really feel fully invested in the choice I've made. But when I took the, I think it's the vice overseer's body you have to take back, is it? When I took the body back, Paolo was like, just, I didn't really know what I had to do with the body. And Paolo was just like wandering around looking for something. So I kept running up to Paolo and putting this body in front of him, and he'd just like walk over it. And was like, but he wasn't acknowledging, they weren't hostile towards me. They were just searching, like almost an alert had been triggered and they were in, you know, that alert state. Mm-hmm.
So were the other NPCs commenting on it as you walked past?
No, they were all doing the same thing as Paolo.
I wonder if that, yeah, it sounds like something didn't trigger, because right from the start, basically when you come into what would have otherwise been hostile territory, then the first person you come across from his gang is like, oh, look, they've got the overseer's body type thing. Yeah. And it'll all make reference to the fact that you're carrying the body right the way up until you get to him.
See, that just didn't happen. They were all in this alert state, looking around for something. Like, they were looking around for my character, but they couldn't see it. And then the game just kind of, like, flashed. And then I ended up in the cutscene. So I don't know what had happened. There was obviously something had bugged out a little bit. And then I was in the bar with Mindy Blanchard.
Which is a dream.
But I didn't even get the what? It was a dream.
It was in the void. Yeah.
So it was all a bit weird. And then they gave me the solution to the puzzle that I didn't know I had to solve. And so it was all a bit, it didn't really work out for me, this level.
Would have been better if you'd seen, as you say, the door first, and the lock would have made more sense. And I guess you like me, you probably have thrown yourself at the puzzle instead. So.
Yeah, and I'm not great with it. I've said this last time. I don't really enjoy navigating the outside areas. I much prefer the levels in a building.
Yeah.
But wasn't there a lot of that here as well? Solved the puzzle, I didn't go. I opened the door and I asked my daughter, "Is this going to end the level?" And she said, "Yes, it is." So I was just for fun. I just went down the route to see where Paolo was and robbed him blind. I didn't do anything to him or anything. They just robbed him for emptied his safe and took some runes and then went back just to see a bit of the level. They were all like indoor environments. You had to sneak through, weren't they?
There's a lot of sort of indoor and outdoor in this bit. So, like, the indoor sections were...
You could climb on the outside of the building and blink over to the other one.
You had to traverse from, like, one section to the next.
Okay. That's it.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I was excited, but I probably ended it prematurely for myself, unfortunately, because the original plan had been to get the overseer, and then I went to go and open the door, with the plan being once I knew I could get the door open, I was then going to go back and finish off Paolo properly this time around. But obviously that then finished the level. It gave you the option to replay it. And I thought, oh, you know what, this is kind of, I'll just take everything on a kind of, a first look basis as I come through the game. So I'm not going to go back in and redo it. But I wish I'd spent more time in that level because I was quite enjoying it.
So, and then you're using the dust storms to creep up behind people.
Yeah.
I like that as well.
This level was the emergence of the Rat King. This was the path that I started taking Corvo down, where I just basically started summoning rats on everybody that I saw. It's it was so much fun. Civilians and everything. A rat attack throughout the city. If I heard any voices, I would just summon some rats and start walking. And it was like, there's kind of a next level you can get. And I think it's called Pied Piper or something like that, where the rats will follow you as well. So you're basically walking
around. Walk around.
Yeah, you're basically walking around with a rat army that are around you. And then the minute they find something, they're on them.
Nice.
Endless amusement.
So when I'm playing Corvo right now, I'm using the whole stop time thing so much. I love being sneaky, looking around and seeing, there's three guys there. Just stop time, rush in, kill them all without them even noticing.
How long does it stop it for?
I don't know, 10 seconds maybe?
Okay, so like a usable length of time. It's not. It's quite generous with the time you have.
I mean, you shouldn't sneak around while everything is stopped. Just run around and you can actually kill 3-4 people if they're close to each other. But you need to make sure, once you poke somebody, they are kind of unfrozen in time. So you need to get behind them and kill them, because if you start just hacking at them, it'll be a mess.
Emily never gets that power.
No, she
didn't. It would have been. It sounds really cool. What would have been really, I don't know if it works like this, but if like you could run around, kill a load of people while the time was frozen, and then when the time unfreezes, everyone just drops at the same time or something like that. That'd be pretty sweet.
I guess you can. Right now, my Corvo turns the people into dust when they die, so they just all disappeared. And you can actually, you can run in, if there are three people, you can run in, kill two, run back out and hide. And the third one won't go looking for you. He'll just say, "Whoa, what happened?"
Some of the powers like are great fun. My issue is twofold. The first one is, I wish there was more mana to play with. Like I never felt like I had enough mana, and a setting was tripping me up. So you know that setting where it automatically uses an elixir?
Yeah.
What I was doing, I ended up switching that setting off where it didn't automatically, because what I was doing, I was, you know, when you blink and you get that recharge time when it basically your mana replenishes.
Yeah.
What I was doing, without really realizing I was doing it, was I was blinking multiple times and using, and every time I did it without waiting for the recharge, it would use one of the Ademeyer solutions.
So it makes that sort of clink. It makes that sort of clink noise, doesn't it, when you use one?
Yeah. But it was doing it automatically, and I didn't realize I was triggering it. And so I never had enough mana to use some of the more fun powers until right at the back end of the game when I cottoned on to what was happening. It's just a shame, really.
So the UI actually shows you when it will use an Ademeyer solution. So if it's kind of grayed out, the power, then pushing the bumper will not use the power. It'll use an Ademeyer solution. Yeah. So I just caught on to that and then made sure to replenish my Ademeyer when I needed it. So
That's only just dropped for me. So I thought it was the case. Obviously, I was using a lot of rat swarms, and I thought it was just a case that I didn't have the cursor in the right place. You know how sometimes, like the...
You don't have enough power for it.
Right, okay. Yeah, well, that would make more sense. Because I was just... But then I guess maybe by the time I'd moved and put the cursor in a different spot, it then regenerated enough to then allow me to use it anyway. So that's really why I never quite
That's another thing. You need to give it time to regenerate, because the good way of using your powers is use it one power, wait a little bit for it to replenish, and then use it again. Because if you use it twice in a row, for example, it'll all be lost. It won't
and
regenerate
that's what I
that
was
part.
Doing. Yeah.
Of course, okay, yeah.
And then was using the mana potions was burning through them.
Yeah, of course.
With blink.
Yeah.
but the possession, like, there's some amazing things you can do. Like I built up the possession so I could possess live humans, and there was one, I think it was in Mission 8, where I managed to get into the black market by possessing the shopkeeper and making him open the door.
Nice. So do you have how much control do you have over them?
You can't attack others,
right?
But you can flip levers. You can
if you go to interact something as you would do normally with your character, it'll give you the prompts
you
to
can
do
open
those
doors. You can flip levers. You can take out whale canisters to deactivate stuff, and you can
do
very
cool.
Yeah, it was so cool. And then I just wandered in.
I want to try
that. Yeah, that is pretty cool.
There are some good uses of it. I'm trying to think, there was one, would it have been, I think on level 8, it might have been, where you had to find a way and just possessed a rat and just ran under the gate. And there's little things like that where you could easily, if you didn't have that power, it'd be probably a much more convoluted solution. But sometimes if you've got the right power in the right place, it's so satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wish there was more mana points. I wish it was just a little bit more generous in terms of giving you like the tools to have a bit more fun. Or maybe one, and maybe this happens, but like whether there was an option for a new game plus to give yourself unlimited mana, just so you could properly just play around with this stuff to your heart.
Yeah, and maybe I say better wheel as well for having all these things assigned.
Oh, the UI is terrible.
I never got to a point where I was going, because I basically had, my main ones were obviously the blinking and then the possession one and then the rat swarm as well. Mm. But there was quite often, I would always have some weapons equipped or at least two of them as well. So you could really only ever have two of the three powers. But I don't know. It's a tricky one because you do have so many different powers, but you would think there's got to be a slightly more elegant way of being able to switch between them, because you could start really linking them together, and that ties into having more mana available in the first place. Because if you think, if you could, just go from one to the next to the next to the next, you could end up doing some really, really cool chains of things and get very creative.
Once you go into the menu and you select a power or a weapon, time stands still. And that means, I don't think it's really a problem. But the problem with the wheel is that you have to control it with the left stick.
That's it.
Yes. I had so many problems getting that precisely enough. I mean, had it just been push a bumper and then right stick. On PC, it's easy because you have just the number keys to switch
the number keys. Yeah, I played this on a one on the PC, but I can't remember. Yeah, I didn't think the UI really worked on console very well.
No, I will agree with that. If it had just been right stick to select it from that wheel, it would have been a problem.
And in a number of times where you'd bring up the wheel mid-fight and you'd want to change to a different power, and then you'd think you'd done it and you'd let go of the L1 or whatever, and you realize you'd actually just deselected the wrong one, and so you had nothing there. You're going to get back into it and quickly reassign it again. It could make for some pretty frantic encounters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit fiddly, isn't it? Even just like it gives you a shortcut to take a health potion if you're really low on health, but even just going in, it's just all a little bit finicky. Yeah.
Well, as I said last time, it feels as if it was made for PC and then ported, because it just works so much better on PC.
Yeah, I mean, the other issue I've got with the powers as well, I wish there were more powers that allowed you to do non-lethal takedowns. I feel like there's loads of powers to play with, to kill hostiles. I think it's a great murder simulator. I think you can have a lot of fun devising ways to kill. There isn't a huge amount of options though to non-lethally take down characters.
Are more with Emily, because you've only played with Corvo, right? So we had, for example, the Far Reach can actually pick up people and drag them to us and then just choke them out and put them to sleep, for example. So we had a bit of extra.
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, and then there was the chain as well, where you could chain.
Yeah. Chain a couple of guys together and then give them a sleep dart and they'll all fall asleep. That was really efficient as well. And
Or one arrow in the head to take down like three enemies.
Corvo seems to have very few options. Like, there's the choke, there's the sleep dart, and there's the stun mine.
Yeah, okay. But Emily has a bit more than that.
And also, I was stupid as well. Like, the blueprint upgrades. I was collecting loads of these blueprints and getting to the shop and thinking, where are all the options? I didn't realise you could scroll through to the different pages.
Is it like R1 or whatever it is?
They could have written that down somewhere. It was by accident that I found out that you could upgrade something that wasn't your bow, because that's the first page.
Exactly that. Yeah. Exactly. I was on mission 9 before I realized I had all these other pages.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I was probably on mission 5 or 6 as well. So,
but it's things like increased stock of, I was walking around with like a maximum of 5 sleep darts pretty much to the end of the game, and was frustrated that I didn't have more of them.
Yeah, there was a definite sort of false economy in that, because initially I didn't want to spend the money on being able to carry extra ammunition, for example. Then you realised the game was actually giving you quite a lot, more often than not you weren't able to carry anymore. So by increasing that, you probably actually saved yourself so much money in the long run.
Yeah, you didn't need to buy bullets. Yeah. arrows, I bought a few arrows, but bullets you could find everywhere.
Everywhere.
And certainly like in the second half, I'd stopped worrying about triggering alarms and stuff like that and doing the stupid R2 spamming to like hack enemies. I was just running around with my gun.
Yeah, but it's not a great first person shooter though, is it?
It's not, no.
If you play it like that, I mean that has to be a sub.
Not in all situations, but yeah, in some. Like there was like in the palace. That was a good. I had a good time with the gun in the palace.
Yeah, there'd be a few times, as you say, if you were, because I think the gun was fully upgraded, so it would basically reload quickly and it was accurate as well. Mm-hmm. And so if you got swarmed by five or six guards or whatever, then you could take them out in pretty quick succession.
And you could stagger them, couldn't you? So you hit a distance with a stagger, run over, quick R2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, before you know it, you've got seven or eight bodies all around the floor.
It was quite good. I liked how they were on different triggers because then you could shoot to stagger them, and then I see you could be running towards them with the charged attack. So that by the time you let it loose, you got the little. Because also in the options, I don't know if you guys tweaked it or not, but you could change an option for or change the frequency of kind of the cinematic kills.
I love those. Okay. I love that. So you follow the arrow in.
Yeah, so I had that up to maximum, and then it meant that each time you went for like an R2 charged attack, you would always get the animation. And then with quite a few other bows and bolts and bullets and stuff, you'd get one as well. It was it just reminds me of Fallout 3, that, you know, with the VAT system and that type of stuff, where it was always it adds to the cinematic feel of the game.
Yeah. I think Far Cry, I remember Far Cry doing something like that as well.
Max Payne as well.
Right. Yeah.
It was the first game, I think, who did that was Soldier of Fortune.
Yeah, Soldier of
Fortune. Yes, I remember that.
There was attacks from all sorts of censorship committees and so on, because this was just ultra violent.
Yeah. Was that the one where it showed like a skeleton?
Yeah, I think so.
And then it shows, like the bullet or whatever skeleton.
That's the sniper game.
That's the sniper series. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of.
They still do that.
Yeah, you can shoot people in the testicles and.
Ouch. But I found the game was more fun when I kind of let the handbrake off a little bit and started being a little bit more liberal with my murders. Like, there's a room in Mission 9 where it's called like the greenhouse or something on the way into the Dunwall Tower, where there's a bone charm in there and there's like four witches working away at something.
Yes.
I went in there with the crossbow, put Ben Time on, froze time, and just four arrows to the head. It was brilliant. Like, it felt great.
I put them all four to sleep.
Yeah, well, you could do, you know, by that point I was, struggling for ammo and maybe losing a little bit of patience with the stealth as well.
Any rooms that had
fun?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Any rooms that have got an abundance of glass in them are begging for either grenades or sticky grenades, because it would blow out all the windows as well. It uses some quite comedic effect.
Yeah. I mean, being ultra violent in this game is for sure fun, but not being stealthy isn't fun, because the direct combat, it isn't a good FPS. So you have to try to be stealthy.
Oh, yeah,
but
for sure.
It's
no,
okay
that was
to be the, open the, for the, just having an all-out battle.
No, the absolute satisfaction was kind of scooting around a place and then leaving spring razors or getting up behind somebody and taking them out. You know, any variety of these things. But the stealthy aspect was a lot of fun when you were doing it.
Yeah.
It's those situational moments, isn't it? I mentioned one on the Discord. I was up on a roof, and there's a little window ajar where you have to drop through, and I'd killed a couple of guards, and there was a guard in the room that I had to get into, but he was asleep. So picked up a head, dropped it through. He woke up. He's like, "Why would anybody do that?" Came right below the window, dropped through, stealth kill on him. Those little situational moments are brilliant.
I think this was the exact same one that mine failed on. So that was when you were looking through the skylight and he was asleep in the armchair.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, I think I was telling you about this one, and I think it's the only time that the game hasn't really managed to fully accommodate my desires. And I thought that maybe if I dropped through, he would wake up. So I shot him with a sleep dart. And then my intention was that I would keep him asleep. And then I dropped down through, and then I snuck across and put a spring razor under his chair. And I went and picked an alarm clock up off of the shelf and went and put it over next to him and set it. And then ran back and then stood in front of him in the hope that the alarm would wake him up. He'd jump out of his chair when he saw me and then the spring razor would get him. But I think basically once they're asleep, they stay asleep. There was nothing. I was like throwing whiskey tumblers at him and everything, trying to get him to wake up. And there was like literally nothing. So
I threw enemies into blood fly nests, fast asleep, and didn't wake up. Just fast asleep next to all these blood flies.
Yeah.
You can imagine Andy's like Joffrey from Game of Thrones, kind of like, just sitting there going,
More.
Oh, how deprived can I be?
Yeah. Well, the game does cater to it. So it's.
It does.
What do you have to do then to get high chaos? Is it just a question of just.
Killing enemies. Just killing the enemies. That's it.
Yeah, I think it seems to sort of, it puts a tab between, what was it, lethal and attack, lethal, or I can't remember, there was, it's bottom left on the chart, whatever that was.
Yeah. So, is
so you'll
it
be assault and,
and
lethal, I guess.
Lethal, yes, yeah.
So
and I think that gives
you hits. Kill, is it just a number in a level where if you kill over a threshold, you tip over into high chaos?
I have no idea. Mine was never anything other than high chaos.
Really?
I would think so. I mean, you can be stealthy or assault. That's the top and bottom. And you can be non-lethal or lethal. So if you do enough killing to be over in the lethal half every time, I guess you're going towards high chaos, right?
Yeah.
Whether you're stealthy or non or in assault mode doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah, I was usually non-stealthy because I get detected every 3 seconds. But non-lethal as well.
Yeah, me too. Apart from my playthrough at Coral, where I'm definitely in the bottom left corner.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
It's a place to be.
It is. So, it's for the winners.
getting back on mission, there is one more way to finish this mission that we didn't talk about. So I wonder if any of you seen that. But it seems that you can investigate somebody called Durante. If you find his office, you can find a solution to the puzzle there as well, to the lock puzzle.
Yeah, so his office is in the Howler's place, right?
Okay.
But I found his office. I didn't ever find a way in, though.
Okay.
There was a couple of doors, where I couldn't get in.
Yeah. Did anyone incapacitate Paolo, though, and kill him the twice to get him to burn?
No, that had been my intention, but like I said, I unfortunately finished the level accidentally early. It would have been good to have seen.
Because I wonder how that plays out, because you've obviously got to take him out twice. I wonder how... I'd be interested to see how that works.
Yeah. But,
none of us did it.
You just need to take him out twice in the same day, so it's just twice in the mission because time doesn't really move along.
You incapacitate him and then he immediately wakes up then, does he? And you just do it again?
I guess he turns into rats, runs somewhere else and then pops up again, so you just have to find him someplace else in the level. If we know this UI, there'll be a big fat marker saying,
"Yeah, go get it."
You might want to look over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So moving along, we are entering mission 7, and that is by far my favorite mission because it introduces a new mechanic, but more on that in a few minutes. This is, we're going into the manor, the lock, the Jindos lock opens the gates to get into Aramis Stilton's manor, and people don't know where Aramis Stilton is. He's been lost missing for 3 years, but we do think that he might be in here somewhere and that the Howlers, I think it is, are keeping him there, or maybe it's the guards, I forget, the Duke. But Aramis Stilton's manor is where Delilah is brought back from the void 3 years earlier, because that's a part of the lore that we learn about, is that Delilah has been in the void and has found a way out. I mean, I guess she died in the real world and entered the void, and then she's found a way to get out by... kind of being summoned in this ritual that was...
Yeah, that's it. They bring her back, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. And when she's drawn out of the void, she hides a piece of her soul in a statue. That's what we find out here in this mission. So, of course, the next mission will be finding that statue so we can grab her soul and make her mortal again, because she's immortal since she doesn't have that part of her soul. Pretty much a Harry Potter narrative, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's her Horcrux.
She's Voldemort. Yeah.
But this mission, I mean... quite early on, you pick up this. What is it? Is it a pair of glasses? Or how is it that you? I forget. Is it a mask?
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's almost like another sort of lens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where if you press X, I think it was, you'll get. So the manor's sort of split into two time zones, isn't it? Past and a future.
And it's like the heart, really. It's something you're holding in your hand and has this fan of mirrors.
It's called a timepiece in the game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So we're in it in the present where it's all derelict and overgrown. Mm. And then you can go back to when it was sort of regal and it's got all the guards and everything else. But you can, there's another option where you're not traveling back in time, but you can look through the glass into what you will
see. It's a really clever graphical effect while you're doing it as well.
So well,
absolutely brilliant. I absolutely love this level.
So this level, you can travel between 3 years ago on the day that I guess very close to the day where Delilah is pulled out of the void, and the present. And of course, some doors will be blocked in the present, but if you go back in time, they're open, you can get through them. And there will be guards, lots and lots of guards back 3 years ago that you need to avoid. So you can just like go into the present, move behind them, because as Jim said, you can open this fan and then you can look into to the past without actually being there, make sure that you're behind a guard, and then switch times and kill him, and then go back again. Yeah. So that just made for such a fun experience of getting through that that level. I had a couch that was in the main hallway where I think I had like 25 people sleeping on that. And then I was just picking them up and putting them over there. But that mechanic was brilliant, simply brilliant. Yeah. The switching of time is great, but the fact that you get a glimpse into the other time period and can use that to be stealthy is just wonderful.
It's a really good environment.
Have you seen that done before? Is there any other games that have done it?
No,
not in sort of real time like that. It just seems, as soon as you started doing it, you thought right away, it became very obvious what you had to do and how you would use it. It was just very instinctive. Be like, I can't believe I've not used this mechanic before in a game. It was very cool.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is things like, the environmental puzzles. It's things like Ocarina of Time or Sands of Time, the Prince of Persia game.
Yeah, but were you able to sort of see the past or present at that point at the same sort of simultaneously? Were you able?
No,
to,
you were kind of just rewinding time, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I just thought it's
Limbo. If you remember that, the platformer.
Limbo, yes. Some of the same things. Yeah.
No, it just felt very quite technically advanced, even for when the game was made. I thought it was a very well. They managed to realise the effect of it very well.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been possible in the original Dishonored. They wouldn't have thought it needed the tech to have moved on. Can't imagine this being done on the PS3 or Xbox 360.
No,
it needed that additional.
Not as well as it was done anyway. It was incredible.
The only thing I could think of is something like, I don't know whether you guys have played that indie puzzle game Viewfinder from the past 2 or 3 years. Have you heard of it?
No,
I've heard of it. Yeah,
where you impose photographs on the world and you can see into that photograph, and then you can step into the photograph, and puzzles kind of layer on top of each other.
Yeah.
But that's a very, very specific use, and the game is around that, whereas this is just one level, right? They've done
it. Feels like such a waste, doesn't it, to only have it on one level, because it's such an awesome mechanic.
Well, it has to be so carefully designed though, doesn't it, to make it work. And you know, because I was wondering, ooh, when we get like onto the next level, will the timepiece have any use?
Same. And you just get like a blank sort of mirror view, don't you?
I mean, it's a hell of a it almost feels like a kind of a side mission, doesn't it? But it's I mean, it would have, I imagine, been a nightmare to design.
Yeah,
Yeah. Must have been fun to design as well, though.
Yeah. There must have been so many points where you thought you'd just about done it. You thought, oh no, wait one second, that's by not having that or by having that, then the whole thing falls apart. It's
one thing we haven't mentioned yet is that it's not just the enemies and open doorways and so on. You can affect things. You can change things in the past, and it'll have an effect in the future. Because if you go back, there's one point where you need to crack a hole in a wall or remove a statue. That's it. There's a statue in the way. So you go back in time and the statue is not in that place yet. It's actually somewhere else being installed. So you destroy the statue there, and then it isn't in your way when you go to the present and so on. And there's lots and lots of things you can alter in the past that will have an effect in the present. I love that.
And that's how I ended up getting into Stilton study, because I did something in the past which then all of a sudden the mansion in the present wasn't dilapidated. There were cleaners there, and I ended up being able to get into Stilton's study because it wasn't locked. And it was something to do with it. It was something I picked up. You know when you go into the garden bit and you go into the past and he's there on the bandstand?
He's on, I
knocked out Stilton in the past. I got him and choked him out. And then that completely changed the present then. And it wasn't, he was fine, and it wasn't a mess. Like, there were staff in there and there were guards and everything.
I think rings a bell, because it brings up a message like you've changed the future or something like that, doesn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, or yeah.
But it completely changed.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
It completely changed the present.
Yeah, I think I threw a grenade at him. I think that changed the present quite significantly. Yeah.
What, did you kill everyone? Did you in the past?
Yeah, well, because I was up on the balcony, and then he was down at the bandstand, and there was four or five guards around, and quite a tight concentration. I thought, oh, this is too good an opportunity, and just threw a grenade down and blew them all to bits. So
and then you have to go down and get the code, don't you, from the bandstand,
yeah.
See, but the code, right, the code is faded, isn't it? I got the piece of paper from the floor, but you can't read the code.
You can so in the future, it's faded, but if you go back to the past, it's not faded anymore.
Yeah, but what do you mean? So you pick the code up in the future, and then when you go back to the past, have you got it in your inventory then?
No, you can read it. So I think it says in the future, when you look through like that mirror.
Yeah, it's it's mouldy.
It says it's like mouldy or something like that. But if you then go back to the past, you can read it.
Yeah. It's just hanging there on a board, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did it completely differently, which is really cool. You know, I did it completely differently because I didn't need to put the code in, because in my game, it wasn't locked. The door wasn't locked.
Okay.
Because of what I did in the...
Because you changed the future by knocking him out.
Yeah.
So I'm just reading it here. So if you knock out Aramis in the past, he doesn't go crazy because he goes insane after the seance. But he doesn't see the seance then. That's why he doesn't go insane and everything is still kind of okay.
Yeah, because he wasn't there in the seance, because you observed the seance, but he wasn't there.
Okay.
He was
there with me, and he was going crazy when I observed it.
Because there's a guard that says something like, oh, he's on his way or something.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. That is pretty cool, yeah.
I kind of wish there was a bit more puzzly kind of stuff that you could do, you know, that required you to kind of go and affect times and...
Yeah, and if it tied in through it like that theme, returned throughout the game as well with the cause and effect.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So break the balcony as well?
No.
So there's at some point there's a balcony, and there's a note from the caretaker that watch out, it's not stable. And if you look, there are like two points that support it, like the elevator, Chris. You remember the elevator?
Oh yeah,
same kind of thing. You could shoot those two off in the past, and then in the present it will have collapsed, and you just climb that and get elsewhere in the level.
Was that some of the three chandeliers that had the levers that could move them?
Yeah, that's
what
not
was,
it, but
that, no, but what was the point of that?
There's a room on the on the top of the building at the ceiling where there's some extra stuff. That's it.
I never figured that out, but I read about that afterwards.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
I went there. I did figure it out and climbed around there.
It made me wonder. Go on, Jim. I was just going to say, none of us have played Deathloop, have we?
I think it
was the last game Arkane made.
My daughter's played it. She says that we need to play it at some point.
Redfall, of course, yeah. And it just makes me wonder if, like, this level was a bit of an inspiration for stuff like Deathloop.
Mm. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it could be.
I wonder. Yeah, I mean, you could easily make how much fun would a whole game of this mechanic be?
Yeah, for sure.
although I did miss my powers. I missed Blink.
Yeah.
Yes. That's true. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you did.
What a feat of level design this is. I mean,
amazing.
The switching between past and present and the cause and effect stuff going on all the time. And just the fun in being stealthier, because you can just go into the present where nobody's there, at least in our present, nobody's there, and find the right positioning, blink bag in, and choke them out.
It was just such a nice surprise as well. I had no idea that the game gave no indication that you were going to get this ability. And you think, you know, it's almost like, you know, they always say that about Mario games, don't they? Where it's the case that, you know, you're given a new mechanic and it's so much fun to use, but then it just lets you for that level and you don't see it again for the rest of the game.
Yep.
Yeah, and this almost felt like a little bit like that. Maybe they didn't want it to overstay its welcome, but I could definitely have done a bit more with it for sure.
Oh, yeah. This was like, when this game hits the highs, it's some of the best gaming that I've had. It's amazing.
Mm. Yeah, some really good concepts in it, definitely.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned Titanfall 2 on Discord. I think I've not played Titanfall 2, but I know you have, Mads. There's a similar thing in that, isn't there, where there's a section where you get given a mechanic and completely changes up the game, and then it dispenses with it, and that's it.
That was great as well. It was a very short, nice popcorn game. Wonderful popcorn gaming. So.
It's for about 5 or 6 hours, isn't it?
It's quite short, but it's good. It's really good. So let's move on to the next mission. Unless, do you have something you'd like to say about mission 7 before we move on?
No, nothing.
Very good. Very good.
So the next is the Grand Palace. This is where we go and end Duke Luca Abel. Of course, he's the guy who's helped get Delilah out of the void and has put her on the throne. And of course, we need to get rid of him. He's been misusing his own country for a while as well, as we see now that we're there. And so he definitely needs to be stopped. This mission is kind of fun. You get given a hint immediately that the Duke has a body double. And the difference between the Duke and the body double is that the body double smokes. Right, so there are different ways of finishing it. You can kill the Duke, or you can find the body double and get him in on cheating the Duke out, so that people will think that the double is the Duke and so on. So that's of course what I did, and the Duke is just thrown in jail, dragged away because they think he's
so
crazy
stupid.
Because he keeps shouting that he's the Duke.
It's ridiculous, but it's brilliant.
Mine was completely different to that. Because you can hear people talking as well, can't you? Mm. I overheard a conversation where the servants were saying they were going to take some food out to the Duke because he was sat in the garden waiting for his dinner. Went out there, found him eventually, and there was a security panel on the wall. I disabled the security panel thinking, right, I'll disable that and then I'll stealth in and kill him. Didn't realise that I'd, like, reversed the security panel. And so electricity just flew out everywhere. Took out the Duke, took out servants, everything around. So that was the end of the Duke.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny when you... I came across... The body double, and I actually hadn't seen him smoke. So you get the option to kind of chat to, and then you get the option to either, you know, take out the character as if, you know, is it the Duke, or treat him like he is the body. And I hadn't seen him smoke, so I just guessed. I was like, oh, keep our fingers crossed. And luckily, it was the body double. Mm. And then, you know, Corvo's like, oh, you know, yeah, it'd be good, wouldn't it? You know, you could be the Duke, you know. And he's like, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that. You know, and then, yeah, they come and cart off the Duke, and no one questions it.
So I met the real Duke first. I knew it was the real Duke, so I choked him out, put him to sleep. And for some reason, I took him downstairs and just placed him there on the floor next to the bed. And then later on, I found the decoy and the body double. And what he wants you to do is go and put the Duke to sleep and place him in the bed. So I just have to go back, pick him up from the floor, place him in the bed, and then yeah. Everything was ready.
This is actually my favorite level in the whole game.
Yeah, this was good.
This was brilliant. I would love this level. It was really good fun.
Just because it felt like there were so many different ways to do it. Like when I got to, I really enjoyed the bit outside of the Grand Palace as well. Thought that all that was cool.
You gaining access to it? So there's, I think there must be more, there's multiple ways of getting into the palace, isn't there? Because I ended up finding my way in through like a balcony, through like a little shop or something.
Yeah, I think there's loads of ways in which you can get in. And it's just a really cool environment outside of the palace as well, like the palace district. And then when you get in, I ended up blinking my way up. I'm basically getting right to the Duke's chambers immediately without...
Okay.
So I ended up at the Duke's window, you know, within...
Did you go down the... up next to the chimney that the smoke was coming out of? Yeah. Did you go through that little window there?
Yeah.
And then you sort of blinked down to the lift shaft and then you're basically there, aren't you?
I was there. Just,
yeah.
You know.
Took me the longest time to find him.
And that was really... And I think you can go in, you can just... obviously, you can go bowl in the main door and there's loads of... There's a gambling room in there. Mm. But it felt like I got in there. I did what I needed to do. I then went and did the thing with Delilah's spirit.
Yeah.
I got in there, done the thing, and I got out. I think this was the shortest time I spent in a mission.
Okay.
And actually made me realise that I probably would have had more fun with the levels had I not tried to just explore everywhere.
Mm.
You know, just to treat yourself like, you know, you've got a mission, you get in there, you do it as quickly and as stealthily as possible.
Yeah, I like
and then
that.
Bugger off.
Mm. Yeah.
I think I would actually prefer that as well, because even though I say I like walking around and discovering everything and reading about stuff, I do like role-playing these games.
Yeah.
But the runes are upgrade material. That's what's keeping me from doing that.
Yeah,
so if there is no critical path, because there's like seven of them here, because there are different ways to get through these levels. But if the runes could just be more on the critical path or close to the things that you needed to do and you could pick them up, then forget about the bone charms. I can live without those, but I need my upgrade.
The
materials.
Runes, you need them,
Or even some other way of earning them, almost linked to your efficiency through the level or something that it's. You're awarded a subsequent number at the end of it or a different mechanic for that. Because, as you say, and then you wouldn't feel quite so like you were drowning in lore at the same time either, where you're not really sort of just, you're not even paying attention to it anymore.
Yeah.
I wonder if the best way to do this, if time was no object, I wonder if like the best way through is to go through high chaos, explore the level, kill everyone so you can fully explore. And then go through it a second time, then stealthily, but knowing because you've got all the runes and it's New Game Plus, you don't need to worry so much about collecting the runes. Mm. But then go through it stealthily, focusing on the main objectives and trying to do it in as role playish type way as possible.
Yeah.
I reckon.
But I did enjoy
with familiarity.
Yeah.
I did enjoy some of the puzzle solving though with the runes, like the environmental puzzles where you're trying to find your way in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. No, I did as well.
You're right.
Yeah, there was one I think I remember with the lift again on the cracking the slab mission. Mm. We have to like manipulate time to go to operate the lift.
Yeah,
that was a good one. Yeah, there was another one where there's a plant sort of you walk along the plant, don't you? That's grown in the future.
Yeah,
and then you drop him through the window. So I did enjoy like some of the puzzle solving in it.
Yeah, I think as Matt said, by the end of the game, I basically not bothered about the bone charms. Like I was ignoring those because I had
they weren't
so
giving
many
you a massive benefit, really. That wasn't you get little incremental improvements on things, but nothing that was ever off the ruins. Like I say, definitely, but bone charms and the black bone charms, there was never anything that you thought, that's actually going to be of a massive benefit to me.
No, no.
They were very specific, weren't they? Like, very specific.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they were. And yeah. there's something that comes in Endgame, and I hadn't touched on it. And while we're talking about bone charms and stuff, I repurposing bone charms on a workbench.
Crafting with bone charms.
Yeah, I had not touched on this at all.
You can't do that, though, can you?
Yeah, it's an ability. You have to buy. You have to use spend runes to get bone charm crafting, and then you can craft. I had one where I could combine four bone charms into one larger bone charm, and then we'd get all of the benefits of those four.
Wow!
But at the level that I have it, it would often be corrupted, so there would be a negative effect of adding it on as well.
Yeah,
that's a mechanic I didn't even know existed.
I didn't touch it.
So that's what the vice is and the grinding bit. Like, is that?
Not at all. But it's what you need. The bone. You pick up these whalebone fragments. That's what.
Yeah,
you need.
I've got
for
a few of those.
Yeah, but that's
so
for
all
the bone,
that other stuff that you could interact
crafting
with.
You can craft anywhere at any time. You don't need to be in any specific.
I wonder if that was.
You dismantle the bone charms, don't you?
Right,
and then that'll give you like a currency that you can spend on.
Yeah, if you haven't picked it up already, because there's lots of whalebone in the environment. But you're right. Whatever makes them tick is not the whalebone. It just needs to be in the whalebone. So you need to dismantle them to put them back together in that new piece of whalebone. That's true.
I had no idea.
No.
Now, that seems like a very half-baked mechanic, to be honest, the whole bone charm thing. All four of us doesn't seem to have put in any weight into bone charms at all.
No.
No, I think once I'd filled the six slots, I don't think there were five slots, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Each time I picked one up, I thought, maybe this would be better. And you'd look at it and you'd think, it's actually not worth swapping out anything that I've already got.
Yeah, same.
That was another thing with the UI. It sounds really, like, pernickety. But there was no way of looking at your list of bone charms without disabling a bone charm.
Yes.
It sounds so really pedantic, but stuff like that you just expect in a modern game.
True.
I loved finding the outside the shrines, you know, where you'd find a couple of runes in one place and you'd get that little cutscene where he'd commentate on what was going on in the level. Yeah. That was always pretty cool.
I think I only ever found up literally a few of them in the entire game. So
there's one in every level.
Yeah. I went for all of those because you get a little bit of extra cinematic.
That's primarily what I would have preferred it for, to be honest. But I wasn't through lack of trying, but there was just a few times where there was.
And there's always
a
couple of runes there as well. If you find a shrine, there's always a couple to find, which is nice.
Okay, ready to move on to the final mission?
Yeah.
Yes, let's do so. So the final mission is called Death to the Empress, because now, of course, we need to stop Delilah. There's no death to Delilah, though, in Chris and I, in our way of playing it, but Death to the Empress is the mission name anyway.
Fate worse than death, mate.
Yeah, a lot worse, actually. But we'll talk about those fates later on, because all of those people we saved, apart from the very first guy, what was he called, the guard, Mortimer or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he was just put to sleep in the safe room. I'm assuming he can get up again and go out at some point. But the rest of them, I mean, Jindosh is brainwashed. And the Duke is in jail. Everybody thinks he's insane because he keeps telling them that he's the Duke. And what happens to Delilah in a short while isn't very nice either. So I'm not sure we've been nice to people, Chris.
No, they're alive. That's something.
I guess it is. So this is the first time we really get to battle witches and lots of them, because, of course, they were there in the conservatory, but only a few of them, like 10, 15. Here, working your way towards the Dunwall Tower. But one thing I loved, actually, was getting back to... This is the first time in the game we get back to a place we've been before.
Yes.
I love that. They should have done more of that. Reuse the locales in some way, because it was really nice to get back to Dunwall Harbor and make your way up there to the tower. But Delilah has definitely made Dunwall a lot darker already. lots of dead people in the streets and witches roaming about trying to kill everything they see. And that's what you need to navigate to get to Delilah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty grim, isn't it? It's like people, soldiers hanging.
Yeah.
It's like what you say. I think it's all the more. It's one of the few parts again that's maybe got that little bit of poignancy or a bit more weight to it because it's now familiar. Because it was, you'd seen it at the start of the game, and then this is you realize what it's become. Rather than if it was a new location, it wouldn't have anything like the same meaning.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, although the start of the game was, you know, 20 hours worth of gameplay earlier for me. I'm not sure I kind of was making too much of a link between what I did at the start and what was going on at the end.
No, I mean, just the feel of the location, though, as much as anything else. Yeah. Yeah, very different.
It's more what Delilah and her following has been doing and not what you've been doing there.
Yes, exactly seen, that. Right? Yeah. You see how it's kind of gone to rack and ruin.
Yeah. Yeah.
We haven't really talked about this, but just to kind of zip back a minute, just to the previous mission, how cool are some of those views that you get of Karnica, you know, from the...
They're stunning, like out in the balcony and stuff.
Yeah.
Makes me really, thinking about, you know, the Mediterranean, when you're on holiday and you see that, it made me think, quite fancy now, the south of Spain or something, or something like that.
Yeah,
it's based on Larnaca, isn't it? The place is called Karnica, but it's based on the Cypriot city Larnaca.
Okay, there you are.
But it's some of the visuals in this game. This game is 10 years old almost.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a very, very good looking game.
It stands up really well. Just shows that there's not that much changes between.
We're talking
mid PS4 and mid PS5
resolution, isn't it? Things like that. And...
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a stunning looking game at times.
Yeah, for sure it is. It plays really well as well. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm no good at seeing how many frames per second things are running at, but this seems to be very smooth to me.
All the frames.
All the frames.
I reckon there's at least two.
Yes, at least.
But I do love a skybox, which I've said before, and I love a skybox in a game.
Yeah, there's got some. There is some nice old graphics
for sure. Yeah. But once we get back into Dunwall Tower, there's a few different ways of getting Delilah dethroned. I'm guessing. Did you guys find and build that new corrupt rune? Did you need to do that when you want to kill her as well?
I didn't do that.
Okay, so you didn't. So. You did probably, Chris, right?
I did.
Yeah. So there's a side mission where you need to find the overseer has a shrine somewhere.
A chapel, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I went to the chapel.
Yeah.
But I didn't get married. But then I couldn't figure. Andy shaking his head.
That's all I can do.
I couldn't figure out the whole. Thing with the bone charms and everything. That's what I was saying earlier on. Like, we'd got to the end game, and then I was trying to create something. I was like, I don't need this.
It was very, very complicated. All the different things you needed to do was like 2 meters away from each other.
Well, was it?
Yes.
I had to look up a guide for this because
what? Oh, thank you, Chris. Yeah, I don't feel quite so bad about that.
I got to the chapel bit, listened to the audiograph. It's really difficult to get to it. It's quite heavily guarded, isn't it?
I'd got
it?
All like, the way to the chapel. There's loads of those clockwork soldiers around and everything. Yeah.
So I managed to get in there stealthily.
Hmm.
And then listen to the audiograph, which triggers the right when you have to craft the corrupted rune.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't trigger. Like, it wouldn't. I was going to the bench and it wouldn't trigger the thing.
I had the same thing. And I jumped on the bench and it there's like a little thing. It says like the thing's like a meter away or something like that.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't trigger.
So I was thinking, what is going on? So I ended up looking it up. And what you have to do is, and to be fair, it does say in the audio, there's a little note next in there which says in order to craft a rune you need to collect these three things
and these ingredients are in the room
so and they're all in the room and if you use the dark vision thing they kind of glow like collectibles do but they're all there and you just need to place them on the altar and then it does it itself. But yeah, I
so
was stumped.
If you pick the first one up, then the altar, there's like an outline that glows, so you,
right.
know that you need to
yeah.
place it there, and there's an outline yeah. of the other two things that are missing as well. So I thought it was so obvious. I picked up
it's
the first thing,
simple,
and, okay,
yeah,
and then I spent like 5 seconds finding the other two.
I was trying to craft it in the start menu.
Ah.
So do you know what I thought you needed to do? So I didn't have any runes in my inventory at that point because I'd used them on a power. So I thought, right, I must need a rune.
Oh, that would have been harsh.
So I ended up going out of the chapel, finding one of the runes, and going back thinking but no, that didn't trigger it. That's the point I looked up a guide. But in doing that, I found the power room for the lift. So at that point, because you need to, one of the ways in which, and at the multiple ways, but one of the ways to get to Delilah is that you switch the power back on for the lift, which allows you to get the lift up to her room.
It was so hard to get out of that room, because once you power it on, two witches come walking down,
yes.
and I didn't want to kill them. So it was hard to get out of there without killing them.
Yeah, I just bent time and blinked away, and then...
I didn't have the time things, because I'm Emily, so...
Yeah, though it's very powerful, the bend time.
Couple of bullets to the brain.
That's it. That's the alternative method.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then after a while, I guess you've made that corrupt rune or you haven't, and you find one of them anyways to get to Delilah in the throne room. Chris and I will then place a corrupt rune on the throne. Because that will throw off the magic. The idea is there has to be a balance, two corrupt runes and two clean runes or whatever it is on the throne. And then she can open like a portal into the void, I guess it is. And make a... I didn't really understand this. If you understand it, Chris, explain it to me. But as I understood it, in this painting, she had this like version of the world that she wanted to... how she wanted it to be. So the world where everybody is doing exactly what she says and she can like form whatever is happening in the world. So she wants to make that into the real world, drag that out of the painting and make it into the real world, that vision or whatever. That's how I understood it.
So was that why it was so important to have a portrait of yourself or to have...
Could be.
Because obviously you're collecting these paintings throughout the game, and then at one point I forget who the dialogue was with, and she was saying that almost by way of payment she was like, and of course we'll make sure that you have a portrait or something like that. So does that then allow them to exist in her post?
I don't know, because Sokolov is working on paintings as well, isn't he, on the ship?
Paintings are magical in this world, especially for the witches. And they use, that's the four witches you killed, Chris. They were working on making this special pigments that Delilah needed to make this final painting, this very magical painting. Because she wants to use this painting to create a version of the world that she wants through the painting and the void, and then pull that out of the painting. That's how I understood it, at least. And by putting one of the corrupt runes there, we'll destroy the balance so that once she goes into that painting and tries to do whatever she does, the magic, it'll stop her from coming out again. It'll block her in there. And that's the ending we got then, because after incapacitating her, we'll throw her into the... She'll sit on the throne, activate all the magic, go into the painting, and she'll never come out again.
Trapped in there.
Yeah.
Did you never go into the painting then?
Yeah, we did. We did fight her in there. Yes.
Oh, okay. Incapacitate her in there.
Which is weird in some way.
I didn't really get the whole duplicate thing, and
so the duplicates were just like her
decoys.
Decoys that she could make, and then like the copy she had at the conservatory, right?
I didn't really know that there were going to be decoys though. So for the longest time, the first decoy that you find, I kept trying to incapacitate that decoy, and then it would trigger the...
They would only trigger when you got close. They didn't. It was all down to proximity. So I just took them out one by one.
I didn't know there were decoys. So I thought that was Delilah, and then kept wondering, why is it not letting me choke her?
I think I just got lucky, because I knew Delilah was sitting. She's sitting right in front of you. You can see her. When you enter the painting,
she's up on the little thing, isn't she?
Well, she's by that throne thing down in the middle of the level, right? You can see her there. But I walked past one of the, there's little collections of statues, really, people standing there.
And I saw one of those statues that looked like Delilah come to life. And that's when I put one and one together and thought, okay, so these are kind of like copies of her. I need to battle those first because otherwise they'll all be on me when I try to grab her. And then I started shooting them because you can shoot them even before they turn from stone into human form or whatever you want to call it. So I just started killing all of the duplicates.
Oh, so in the end, I got frustrated. I didn't even attack the duplicates. I ended up just finding my way, climbing up. Delilah's up on top. You have to climb.
That's right, yeah.
Up to... So I didn't touch the duplicates, and I just, in the end, found the real Delilah. So and
you found a way to get there without waking any of the duplicates?
You can climb up the cliffs.
Oh, I didn't know.
You can climb up the cliffs,
okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Before I went into the painting, I'd had... I totally forgot about the heart thing. And yeah. She basically like keeps bringing herself back to life, doesn't she? And I was expecting to like do it so many times and then it'd bring up a trigger to use the heart and it never does. And I was going for this fight for like half an hour. I was like, what is going on? Yeah, then eventually I realised, oh, I've got to use the heart.
Yeah. And you didn't use the heart on her?
I didn't use the heart on her straight away, no.
So what happens when you kill her then?
She just comes back to life.
So we didn't say this, but in mission
for half an hour.
I'd burn all through all my bullets, I'd burn through all my arrows, I'd burn through all my health regens.
What's the definition of insanity, Jimbo?
Yeah.
So mission 7, you pick up Delilah's soul fragment in the heart and Jessamine leaves the heart. So now you've only got Delilah in there instead. So that's what Jim's talking about. So you need to put her soul back into her, of course, because that's what we learned, Jim.
Yeah.
That's what. Why did we put her soul into the heart? Because she's invincible.
Invincible, yeah.
How did you use the heart on her then?
Once again?
No.
You can use it at any time. You can just run into the boss battle, trigger her, so that she like comes in to attack you. Then you can use the heart straight away.
But doesn't it give you the objective to use the heart on Delilah?
It did for us because we incapacitated her and then brought her back into the throne room, and then you need to use it while she's sitting in the throne, right?
That's right. No, on ours, we had to... You basically go straight into a fight. It'll just keep running until you... deduce that you need to use the heart.
Use the heart, yeah. Okay.
No, and then that then allows you to enter the painting. But then
yeah, that's right, yeah.
I think that's right, Mads. I think when you first go into the throne room where she is, you sneak up on her and use the heart. She then flees into the painting.
You
bring her back out of the painting, stick her on the throne.
Yeah.
And then she ends up going back into everything and getting trapped.
That's it.
I'm sure I don't know, I might be misremembering, but I'm sure the game, the objective was use the heart on Delilah.
Yeah.
I was expecting a trigger to use it, though.
Right. Actually, as physically kind of bringing it out and...
Yeah, like press X or whatever, but you have to actually have it in your left hand, don't you?
And
yeah.
You almost have to use it like a weapon, don't you?
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to hearing about the different endings then, because Chris, you can tell the people what our ending was, if you remember.
It was only about 2 days ago, but I don't have great recollection of it. So you see...
it's all very rosy.
You then go and wake up Emily, who's there in the throne room in stone. So the end of the game, and it actually prompts you, doesn't it, this will end the game, is the end. Once Delilah flees back into the painting, then that doesn't end the game. And I actually thought to myself, Jesus Christ, where is Emily? Because it says wake up Emily to end the game. So I was like, am I going to traipse all around now? But she's actually just right there in front of you.
Right next to you, yeah.
So then you do that, and then you see like basically the end cutscene, isn't it? And yeah, the fake Duke is now on the throne. And he's got Paolo whispering into his ear. And I think it says basically Emily rules peacefully over Dunwall for the next 50, 60, whatever it says, 70 years.
Yeah.
So basically everything is rosy. Peace reigns. Emily and the fake Duke work together.
Yeah.
and he's turning into Kratos.
I was just thinking it was Ned Stark's just rocked up.
Getting cold. Carry on.
Need a blanket, Grandpa?
Don't mind me. I do, actually. Thank you very much.
Winter's coming.
Yeah.
It's never left. But yeah, so everything, it's all good. And Emily's on the throne. And Corvo is her advisor forevermore. And no more rats and no more blinking. And everyone's happy.
And even Delilah's happy, if I recall correctly. Because what actually happened is that she's trapped inside a version of the world that she thought she wanted to build.
Okay.
So she just thinks that everything is good, but she's caught in the painting.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm happy with that then. Low chaos.
Low chaos, yeah. So you guys, what was the ending like?
Very different to that.
Yeah. It's a bit of a mess, really, I think, isn't it? It's,
yeah. So the Duke was dead. Paolo's running the gaff in place of the Duke. Delilah sat on the throne. I think it said the same, like 50 years or something like that, but she's like just a bitch, basically. Everyone's dead.
So Emily sat on the throne, not Delilah.
You
said Delilah sat on the throne.
Oh, did I? Sorry, yeah, no, Delilah's dead.
Yeah,
dead.
Yeah, so, yeah, I forget. I think she's not called like Emily the Vengeful or something like that. So basically, everybody's absolutely terrified of her and Corvo, so you're basically
Oh, no, Corvo's still stone in mine. So he's big stone statue next to Emily.
You took the throne.
Yes, I took the throne. Yeah, so Emily sat there on the throne with a big statue of her dad next to her.
Oh, nice!
Oh, God,
that's harsh. So the base of my only justification for my behaviour the whole way through the game was basically it was just an act of revenge for anybody who was basically getting between me and Emily. And so I unfroze. I did get the option. And I did. I'm not going to lie. I did contemplate taking the throne myself, but I thought, no. Then this kind of that undermines all my justifications for the deaths along the way. So I went and unfroze her, and yeah, she takes the throne as something like Emily the Vengeful, and then basically Corvo is effectively her muscle, and I think basically the people just live in fear of the pair of them, really. So it's not a particularly rosy ending, but I just like the fact that it was just their family and I were just basically a powerhouse.
I like that, all different endings, that's good though.
Yeah.
Do you know what, so many, I've just looked now, all the different endings. There's just so many. Like, you can get Corvo rules Karnica, the Abbey rules Karnica, the Howlers rule, the Body Double rules. There's an ending, which is quite difficult to get, where there's a council that rules Karnica.
Okay.
Corvo rules Dunwall, Emily rules Dunwall, Megan Foster or Billy Lurk.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I don't know what happened to Megan. She just sort of slopes off.
In the end, Megan, just before you go out on the final mission, at least in my playthrough when I had the low chaos and I was a good person, she admitted to Emily that she killed her, well, was part of the gang that killed her mother.
Okay.
She was out there on that mission as well. And I felt like I had a choice there to either say, it's okay, time has gone since that, and then just move along, or probably kill her, because you could have a negative response to it as well. I went to the high road, of course, but I was just wondering what would happen if I took the other road there.
I killed Sokolov before I went on the final mission.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
He spoke to me like, he was quite judgmental when I spoke to him, and I went and spoke to him just before I went to go and speak to Megan Foster, and I went and spoke to him, and he was quite sort of standoffish with me, and basically called me out on my kind of murderous rampage, and he's just like, we'd saved him ultimately. Like, a little bit of gratitude, please, old man. And
I know what you mean. He talks about, we all have choices or something.
Yeah, exactly. And then he turned back around to go back to his painting, and then got a knife in the neck. So that was him.
I killed Megan.
What?
Well, it was subsequently that I got Megan's key, went up on deck and got her key.
Yeah.
I went back and opened her quarters and nicked all her stuff. But I thought that had been what caused her to leave, but obviously not.
So
I just went and stabbed her
and
then was gutted because her body fell in the water. So I thought, I'm not going to get the key anyway. But then her body floated to the top.
Oh,
so
okay.
I went and retrieved the key. So I was able to get the room, which was much valued, that was in her
quarters. That's right, she never got to actually admit to you that she was there trying to kill Jessamine.
No, well, she, do you know what she said? She says, oh, Corvo, can you? I need to talk to you. And just as she was about to start talking, in went the knife.
Oh, God. It's like I've been made to this entire...
Hold that thought, Megan. Then we play as her in Death of the Outsider.
Yeah.
Do we?
Yeah. So,
yeah, that's
that?
True. We're Billy Lurk, yeah.
That? How can that be? Because she's deed.
Hmm. No. But is Death of the Outsider before or after this? Or?
It's after.
It's after.
Oh,
okay.
Is it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she reverts back to her name, Billy Lurk, apparently, and goes to work with Dowd from Dishonored.
Maybe you'll just pay 25 quid for a blank download then in your case.
No character. A character doesn't exist. I was actually, it wasn't really that exciting in a room, is it really? Probably it wasn't worth killing her for.
Well, yes and no, because obviously I didn't play the first. I didn't know any of the lore from the first. And so when you went in and you saw the two posters up on the wall, then... That was a penny-dropping moment for me where I was like, wait one second, she's clearly connected to all of this. She'd alluded to the fact that there's a lot of stuff she wasn't telling Corvo in my playthrough. And I kind of made the assumption that she must have been involved in some shape or form. Because it was a poster of obviously her and her partner with those quite cool masks they had on as well. But then when I went...
stole that key piece of story.
Then by the time I went upstairs, but then I had obviously decided that that was it. She was, you know, her card was marked at that point. But then when I went back up, she was already, she'd gone. Which worked, you know, I thought was quite a good, it was probably not intentional. That would have just, but I thought that was quite a good, I liked the way that worked basically, where she'd been there the whole game. And I guess, I mean, could you have nicked that key off her at any point?
I assume you could pickpocket it at some point.
Yeah.
There was no.
Was her quarters always accessible? Because
no, I don't think it was. Not until
I wonder if that's what it was
mission.
Then. Yeah, because the it wasn't it always showing up with runes on the boat either,
no,
was it?
No.
Ah, okay. So I think it must have been just at the end there, maybe with the intention of doing that. Just it was a bit of a red herring because I thought that maybe she'd, whilst I was in rummaging around her quarters, that you know that would give her justification to walk away.
And could we have killed them before the last mission? I wonder.
I wouldn't have thought so, because the whole thing just falls down.
He's
going to
drive the skiff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you drive the skiff yourself on the last mission, at least. So, yeah, well, in my playthrough, she actually admits what she's done and so on and says that she's sorry. And so I got the good ending in that respect as well, I guess.
Did you kill her after she admitted it?
No, of course I didn't.
No, Matt.
She had to die.
Yeah. So this was great, guys, all the way through Dishonored 2. And it seems that we are getting ready for playing the DLC, even though we said that we didn't want to do DLC directly after main games. But there's a lot of people on Discord ready to play the DLC with us, so we better stick with it, right?
Yeah,
you just
I'm well up
it
for
clear
it.
That it isn't DLC and that you don't buy it from within, because I was... got confused about this. You don't buy it from within Dishonored 2.
Oh.
You don't buy it from the Dishonored 2 store page. It's its own standalone expansion.
Mm. Okay. But it's a smaller game, right? It's a... you said like an 8-hour game or something like
well,
that?
Well, right? 6 to 10, depending on your play style. But given I've spent 25 hours on the main game, I'm fully anticipating I'll be at the... higher end of that spectrum.
So we'll do that in one episode. So for the listeners, it'll just be the entire game for the next episode. It's Death of the Outsider on Game Pass. It's there, and I'm pretty sure it's within the game on Game Pass, right? So you start Dishonored 2, and then you can choose Death of the Outsider.
No, so on my version, it's its own separate download.
Okay, but it's still on Game Pass, right?
It's on, so you don't need Game Pass Ultimate, you just need Premium, which
and
is the
nobody
middle.
Needs Ultimate anymore because it's
no,
like
it's the $10.99
middle
subscription.
£9 a week.
Yeah, I just cancelled my Ultimate, and Gru is now frantically trying to finish everything that is available in Clair Obscur because that goes away in 2 days.
Of course, So you've lost all the day one stuff,
It's also on PS... Don't ask me to explain the PS Plus tiers, but if you've got premium PS Plus, it is available on there. If you haven't and you want to play it on the PlayStation, it's actually 25 quid. Which is a lot of money, isn't
That's
it?
That's a lot for
it is a lot of money.
A small game.
But as Jim mentioned earlier, I think probably the cheapest way, if you don't have access to Game Pass and you don't have access to PS Plus, PC is your friend. And I think if you went on something like, I had a look on Amazon earlier, and you can buy the physical version secondhand on Amazon for £6.
Okay.
And I think if you went to CD Keys, I reckon you could probably pick it up for pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Steam.
Yeah. So I've just had a look on CD Keys now, or Loaded as it is. It's there's a Steam key for $4.99.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's the Xbox version as well. So that's obviously cheaper than the $10.99 for Game Pass.
That's not too
if you
bad.
Want the PC version, it's £3.
Okay.
So
I'm sure people can find it. Most of the guys on Discord already has it, it seems. So yeah, I think so. They're ready to play.
Yeah, the consensus on Discord was that people wanted to play. I took a little bit of a test of water earlier, and the response was a pretty overwhelming, yes, let's play it. So
cool. So I will be playing through. I want to finish my High Chaos playthrough first, and then I'll dive into this. But I'm already almost through Mission 5 with that, so it'll be good.
Nice. Yeah, well, Andy's away, isn't he, on holiday now? So we've probably got a little while to get this done.
Yeah.
Yeah, see how you're progressing. If time allows for it, I'll certainly play it when I get back. But if it's the case that you guys have played it and things are just naturally progressing, then don't worry, I will play it at some other point. So, yeah, just whatever works
play
with
it,
everything.
Play it when you, I think it'll be fun for us all to. I mean, we're in no desperate rush, are we?
Oh, I'm setting up for a bit more of it. I've enjoyed it.
Roshi's playing his 42nd run through. He needs to finish that.
Yeah, we need to give him something new to do.
Done by midnight. And,
that reminds me, actually, Roshi was talking about the whole Jindosh silent achievement you can get if Jindosh doesn't actually see you. It turns out you get that not if he doesn't find out that you're there at all, but if he doesn't see you, directly see you.
So that makes a difference.
I got it today with Corvo. While I was playing the mission, because he didn't see me, and I there's a point when you just enter the mansion, you go up these big stairs, and if you go to the window, there's kind of like a bridge that's been retracted.
Remember.
And he's standing on the other side. So if you go there, he'll see you. If you go too close to that, he'll see you. But if you don't, and then when you get to his lap, what I did was I stopped time and I ran behind him and killed him. I got that achievement because he'd never seen me. He didn't know who I was. In the playthrough I had with Emily, he'd be talking about Emily because he knew it was Emily that was there. In the playthrough I had with Corvo, he would talk about there being somebody in the building, but he wouldn't know that it was Corvo.
Another step closer to the platinum, mate.
He's getting the bug, isn't he? He's getting the bug.
I don't want
That's
to destroy
starts.
The game for myself.
Interesting one, though,
So, guys, let's wrap up. Any shout-outs before we leave?
Usual from me. Hello to all the Discord peeps and to all the support we get from Mr. Swain for our covers. And a perennial thank you to Stephen Erickson for our music.
Always.
I'll echo all the above.
Yep, likewise. And I know we're going to play a bit more of it, but just thanks for the pick, Mads. I've really enjoyed this. Again, yet another game that I wouldn't probably have come across naturally.
No,
so it's good. And it's nice. I feel ready for a bit more, definitely. It's nice when you finish the game and we're not burnt out on it by any stretch of the imagination. So, yeah, looking forward to the next installment.
I'll shout out Chris and say thank you for your patience and the way that you accept my whining about editing. It's... It's wonderful, and there's a barrage
you
income very
soon, mate.
You said
anything about accepted it, mate?
Yeah. We'll see what comes up on the Slack chat over the next week.
Yes. Those words and sounds, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.